On tech news today, the PC market in decline, life logging on the rise, and the Selfie Olympics medal ceremony coming up next.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for tech news today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
It's Friday, January 10th, 2014, and this is Tech News Today. Tech News Today is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPhone, iPad, and other Apple products are worth at gazelle.com. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Mike Elgin.
I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Jason Howell.
Tech News Today delivers the top tech news in 30 minutes or less. I am so glad CES is over.
Are you?
I am, because as somebody who covers it, and you do too, it's so difficult to do anything at CES. Nobody returns your calls. Everybody's really busy. At the show itself, I find that probably 60% of the stuff there isn't new, but they're trying to pass it off as new, and a lot of people are reporting it as new.
Mm-hmm.
The really new stuff is covered by absolutely everyone, so if you want to do something unique that other people aren't reporting or covering, it's very difficult because it's the same information being spoon-fed to all the tech journalists. So it's kind of a pain in the neck, actually, and I'm glad it's over.
I'm glad, too, since we've been sitting here all week talking about it, that finally, and we managed to not get the CES plague that a lot of people are bringing back from Vegas.
We'll get our own plague.
It's just a winter plague.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's the first worldest of problems, so let's get to some real problems in the top news. As you probably know, Target was hacked in December, and now the retailer's giving details, and they're not pretty. Target said today that personal information of customers was taken, not just credit card data, and this included names, mailing addresses, phone numbers, and email addresses. And here's the worst part. The number of people affected is 70 million people, not 40 million as reported before. The company issued a statement that said, in part, at this time, the company is not able to estimate the costs or a range of costs related to the data breach. Target did promise to cover the cost of any fraudulent charges that result from the breach.
Are we in that post-PC world yet? Not if you ask Lenovo. Research firms Gartner and IDC say the PC industry sold 35 million fewer PCs in 2013 than the year before. That is a 10% drop. However, the winner in all of this was Lenovo, based in China, which sold 2 million more computers worldwide than number two, which is HP, although HP is still number one in the U.S. So who's the biggest loser here? Well, it's Microsoft. Alternatives like iPads and Android tablets are gaining market share at Windows' expense. Gartner thinks that only 15% of internet-connected devices sold in 2014 will run Windows. Meanwhile, Apple is eating into business and enterprise computing, again at Microsoft's expense. As business goes mobile, iOS devices are the new hotness, and the trend is driven by apps. More than 90% of all business apps were deployed on iOS in the third quarter of last year, according to the Wall Street Journal.
In other Lenovo news, the company wants to sell smartphones in the United States. Last year, they said sales would start this summer, but today, Lenovo execs told Sina News that that ain't going to happen. An entry into the U.S. market will take 2 or 3 years for Lenovo, well after a push to sell in Latin America. Lenovo, it's hard for us Americans to believe, is the world's third largest smartphone maker after Samsung and Apple, according to Gartner, thanks mainly to its strong presence in China.
iPhone owners unite. We got this. Okay, I'm not trolling. I'm just reacting to data from a company called Actix, which measures how widely used phones are in North America and across Europe. The top three most used phones by far are, in order, the iPhone 4S, the iPhone 5, and the iPhone 4. Actix figures out tracking communication between mobile devices and carriers' mobile networks. Samsung devices came in 4th, 5th, and 6th places with the Galaxy's S3, S2, and S4, respectively.
India is turning down free Google services. Why? Because the NSA, that's why. We told you last Thursday that Google would donate its help for India's upcoming elections, including registration databases and Google Maps help with polling stations. Well, the Commission Election of India yesterday said no to the offer. Unnamed commission officials told Reuters that Google was rejected for a handful of reasons, and one of them was concern about spying by the NSA.
Sony's finally confirmed rumors that it's seriously interested in making Windows Phone handsets. Pierre Perron, who is the head of Sony Mobile Europe, told TechRadar that Sony is, quote, actively looking into the possibility of launching a Windows Phone and moving beyond making just Android handsets. Nokia ended 2013 with 92% of the Windows Phone market. So Microsoft really needs some more partners.
The camera maker GoPro plans to offer extreme sports videos on Microsoft's Xbox Live. The start date has not been confirmed, but GoPro's sports channel already exists on Virgin America flights. It's probably going to be something similar to that one.
The review site Yelp was ordered by a judge to out 7 reviewers, as in reveal who they are. A small business called Hadid Carpet Cleaning of Alexandria in Virginia suspects that 7 negative reviews were fake, not created by customers, but possibly by their competitors. So they subpoenaed Yelp to turn over the identities of these reviewers. Yelp refused. Hadid went to court, and now the Court of Appeals of Virginia ruled that Yelp has to reveal who they are. Yelp doesn't require users to add too many personal details about themselves. But here's the amazing part of this case. Yelp does record the IP addresses.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Gazelle. Gazelle is a fantastic site that will buy your used gadget, and they'll give you money for it. They'll give you cash or a check, or they'll give you an Amazon gift card with an extra 5%. All you do is you go to Gazelle, you go to the website, which has essentially a search engine. You drop down the menu, you put in your device. It can be an iPad, an iPhone, any number of Samsung devices, whatever you've got. You can go there and see what they offer money for, and they'll tell you how much they'll pay you for it. Again, just go to gazelle.com. That's GAZELLE.com. Enter your item and find out how much they'll pay. They'll even buy broken iPhones and iPads, and you get a risk-free offer and free shipping, which is just great because they'll help you solve several of your problems. One of your problems is you got a bunch of junk lying around, awesome phones that used to be awesome and now they're less awesome. You've moved on to the brighter and shinier thing. The second thing is you'd like to have more money to buy your next gadget. And that's always fun. We're all gadget fans, and we want to get the next iPhone, iPad, Samsung device, Android device, whatever, and this will help to fund that purchase. Offers are good for 30 days, which gives you time to transfer the data or set up your new device. And Gazelle will even wipe your data for free, so even if you're not sure whether there's anything on that device that may end up in the wrong hands, Gazelle will take care of it for you. They'll simply erase it in a professional way that makes it impossible to get your data. Gazelle has actually paid more than $100 million to more than 700,000 happy customers. It's fast processing and no listing hassles at all. I put in my devices all the time. Sometimes it's just an entertaining thing to do, just to go in and see how much your device, even a device you're still happy with, just see what they'll pay you for it. And then once you see how much they'll give you, oftentimes you start looking around at brand new stuff and think, hey, you know, maybe it's time for me to sort of re-upgrade on that. So find out what your phone is worth. Just take a minute, go to gazelle.com and find out. And do it now because your iPhone may lose value the longer you wait. That's gazelle.com. Today in the conversation, we're going to be talking with Dan Patterson. Dan is a writer, broadcaster, and also a project manager for Tanuki Labs. Welcome, Dan.
Hey, it's great to be here, guys.
So, Dan, what is Tanuki Labs?
Tanuki Labs is an outshoot of kind of an well, we make stuff. We hack stuff and build stuff. We came from the NYC Resistor and MakerBot kind of communities that exist in downtown Brooklyn. And now we grow like crazy because we build stuff in Rails. I, of course, come from a journalism and content creation background. So it is my job to kind of help technology, look outside of just technology, but apply a lot of the values to the projects that we're working on.
Fascinating. So I understand you're working on a journalism project that will take you to the Middle East. What's that all about?
Yeah, that's right. So for a small organization called Small World News, I will be working with journalists in a couple different countries, both south of the equator and just north of the equator. We want to be a little discreet about the locations that we're visiting, but we are teaching journalists using mobile devices that we supply that are air-gapped from a cell data network, best practices of security, PGP, encryption, that kind of stuff. So secure communication tactics.
So there's a clear trend toward entrepreneurial journalism happening now, and you write a lot about journalism and media. and innovation in journalism and media. And there's a trend toward this, what I call the Twittification of journalism, where the content creators kind of take control and start their own companies. Examples like The Information, The Inside, The Recode. How is this going to affect the quality of journalism? I assume that everything is going to get a lot better, but what do you think?
Well, you know, I was a successful failure in doing that. Last year, or 2 years ago now, I quit ABC to start a company that was sponsored by Sumwall here in New York City, right around the corner from us, called CoPoint. And in fact, I did much of what Twit does. It was a successful failure. And then one thing I learned was that you need to generate a heck of a lot of revenue to make up for a lot of the overhead that comes in journalism and content production. Having said that, I think that New York City is a media town, and often what we find ourselves, the inside baseball for us is discussions about media and politics and policy. And so oftentimes the conversation is driven by or through the optics of media. Having said that, the trend in media, the trend in publishing, whether you are small like or a startup like The Information or Kara's new venture, or whether you're a large publisher like The New York Times, is towards native advertising. And advertising, that means content advertising that is created often by editorial teams and placed in flow, in stream on large websites. The Times just debuted their native advertising, and it's fairly well disclosed. But of course, BuzzFeed, HuffPo helped pioneer native advertising. And to, you know, the quality of the journalism kind of depends on the outlet's model for acquiring customers. But the model for monetization seems to be flattening and spreading across the board, whether you are big or small.
I see the native advertising phenomenon in the same way that I see companies like Yahoo getting into the journalism business, essentially.
Yeah.
It's companies that are not publishing companies becoming publishing companies. And in the case of Yahoo, of course, hiring mainstream talent like Katie Couric and David Pogue. And they're both of a kind in the sense that non-publishing companies tend to have more money these days than publishing companies. And they also have a strong interest in both attracting eyeballs and, to a certain extent, controlling the news. Where do you think this is going? Is this going to end up at a point where only the Yahoos of the world have the money to do journalism, and then the real publishing companies just can't compete?
Well, what's really interesting is that we are kind of seeing a flattening, like you just discussed. So on the other end of the spectrum, we see companies like BuzzFeed. In fact, friends of mine from Digiday who study this and analyze this, and I had a conversation last night about how companies like BuzzFeed are building their own internal technologies that mirror those of tech companies. So a great example of that would be Newsbeat, which is created by Betaworks. Newsbeat tracks real-time analytics on your site. So did this link send these many visitors right now? Not like Google Analytics where there's a lag, but right now. But we see larger publishers like BuzzFeed building their own technologies and coming closer to our space, to the tech space, and really having to learn a lot of the values of technology. And then from the flip side, just like you said with Marissa and Yahoo, we see those technology companies starting to adopt a lot of the values of media and publishing in order to differentiate themselves, to say, you know, hey, we may not be just like Google. We are a player with unique voices in it. So what's really interesting to me is that we're seeing a convergence of, and we'll continue to see this certainly over the next 18 to 36 months, speaking short term, we'll see this convergence between tech companies over here and media publishers over here, kind of their values amalgamating.
That's fascinating, Dan. Thank you so much for joining us. It's been really interesting following your career. You're one of the few tech journalists who really tells stories. And you also always bring in tech, politics and culture. And I really appreciate your work.
Well, it's great to be here, guys. I appreciate being on the show, and I'm looking forward to see where it goes in the future.
All right. Thanks again. You can find Dan at danpatterson.com. Well, we have another final CES package from Father Robert Ballasser, host of This Week in Enterprise Tech, Know-How, and Coding 101. What do you have for us, Robert?
Hey, TNT, you know what? We're getting tired, but just for you, here's CES, day three. We've stopped by the AMD Pavilion to take a look at this. This is iFinity. I think it's the future of gaming. What we have here are five high-definition displays for 5760 by 1080 resolution off of one card. They're going to start designing games like this to take advantage of these multi-screen setups because, as we all know, these are going to become more the norm than the exception. I believe that this type of gaming, this immersive experience of gaming, will be the new gold standard. One of the things I said in my wrap-up during day one of CES was that we were seeing a stealthy trend towards the support of amateur content creators. And I actually got a lot of email, a few tweets, about whether or not that was actually true. It absolutely is true. We've seen here at CES in just a few minutes, dozens of content creators walk around with small cameras, small rigs, pretty much the small setup for the amateur content creator. And then we also see things like this. I talked about this yesterday. This is a rig from MXL that I'm seeing more and more. This is their, I believe, VE001. It's about a $200 kit that is very simple. It has a bracket and a clamp with two shoes that allow you to hook up this shotgun microphone and then, say, maybe an external lighting source. The cool thing about this is I could slap in the clamp, any phone I want, hook up the microphone with a Y cable that allows me to use a monitor, and boom, I've got myself a portable studio. And when I mean portable studio, I really mean a portable studio. Drop something like a Droid Motorola Max in here that has all-day battery, and not only can I record, but I could stream the entire event. We're going to see more and more gear like this and more support from events like CES for the individual walking around with a camera, an idea, and a good piece of content. We're here at the Views booth, and I'm standing next to Mrs. Stephanie Cordisco, the president of R.J. Reynolds Vapor Company. Stephanie, thank you very much for talking to us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Now, this is the Views. It's a digital vapor cigarette. Now, for those people who are immediately going to shun this, let me say for a second, I have personal experience with this, of these units stopping one of my best friends from smoking after 60 years. I loosely understand how these work. They essentially heat up a liquid until it becomes a vapor that you can inhale. But what makes this smart?
Okay, what makes it smart is the current e-cigarette today lacks any type of digital technology, microprocessors. And so what you're seeing with the e-cigarettes today in performance is that they start out at a very decent level of aerosol and nicotine. But over time, in the course of using the product, the level of nicotine being delivered and aerosol degrade and diminish over time. The microprocessor is going to modulate power and heat delivered to the cartridge 2,000 times a second. So why that's important is it's making sure that smokers are getting a true cigarette-like experience. They're going to get the same level of satisfaction and taste so that the last puff is just as good as the first.
I know there are some of you out there who still don't know what a Fitbit is, which is why we've got Lindsay Cook, who's going to tell us all about this remarkable little band. Lindsay, what is that?
We're Fitbit. We're the leader in the connected health and fitness category. So we make a bunch of different products and experiences to help people lead healthier, more active lives. So this is our Fitbit Force. It's one of our newest activity and sleep tracking wristbands. And what it does is it tracks all your activity all day. So your steps, your distance, your calories, the floors you climb, as well as your active minutes. And it connects all this information wirelessly and automatically to mobile and online tools.
I know Fitbit for a long time was really the private domain of those proud iPhone users, but you made an announcement at the beginning of the CES that should make Android users happy. What was that?
We already synced with the Samsung Galaxy S3 and S4 and a number of other ones for a total of 17 Android devices. So we're really offering more users, no matter what smartphone they use, the opportunity to get active and use our products.
There you have it. Get active, get wearable, get fit. I think looking back over the show, the biggest trend that encompasses everything is that, yes, we are seeing the beginning of innovation. There's a lot of products in their nascent state. There's a lot of things that are not yet finished, but it's no longer just rows and rows of iPhone cases and batteries. We're now seeing products that break out of their genres, and I think that's good for the industry. Looking towards CES 2015, we can definitely look to see more home automation. We can definitely look to see more in small tablets and small devices. But we're also going to see, I think, a genesis of the consumer electronic device as a standalone thing of beauty. I'm Father Robert. Back to you, TNT.
I could just see how tired he was.
Oh, yeah. Yes. He was a robot.
Did a great job. Great job. And it's like you can just see all of the energy kind of falling away.
Just watching him makes me exhausted, but we thank him for all his incredibly hard
absolutely awesome all week
work. Yeah. So so Sarah, you you have been looking at all the coverage of CES, and you found one organization that is kind of doing it better than others.
So at the beginning of the show, you mentioned that, you know, CES is a lot of hype. There's a lot of stuff that's either not new and kind of spun as new or is never going to come to market. And some of it is sort of a waste of time as we sort of sit here and try to absorb everything. I love the Wirecutter. We talk about the Wirecutter on Twitter all the time because their approach is basically, we want to give you good reviews of gadgets and technology without all the fluff. Now, you could say, well, doesn't every publication kind of do that? Nah, not really like this. They actually had 4 staffers, 6 researchers, editors. They all went to CES, and they had said, Brian Lamb, who formerly worked at Gizmodo, who runs the Wirecutter, said, we're going to write one article when we come back from CES, just the one. Wait for it. Because they're going to bring in all of this stuff and then just talk about the products in one nice little article and save all of us the trouble of reading too much. Now, in this article, they talk about a bunch of stuff that they saw that they liked. Some of the stuff that I think is kind of cool. First of all, the Mophie Space Pack is something that I'm going to need to get for myself because it's not just a battery pack, but it's also either a 16 gig or 32 gig version of flash memory in a case for an iPhone 5 or 5S. I have a 5S, so that's perfect for me. I love Mophie.
Yeah.
That's a great great company. They also showed off a Nikon entry-level DSLR, but it's really nice. It's $650, which just goes to show you. And what's nice about the Wirecutter is they said, you know, this is a lot like the $1,500 version of what Nikon also makes, the D7100, which is it's a better camera. But entry-level cameras now for something that's very, very nice and takes beautiful pictures. Yeah. I mean, way sub $1,000 at this point.
Yeah. 6 years ago, that would have cost $10,000 or something ridiculous. It's really would have been considered almost a professional camera. And now you can just get it for the price of an iPhone, basically.
Yeah, which is, I mean, for anybody who's sort of a photo enthusiast but felt held back by the crazy prices. Yeah. I mean, that's just great. Yeah. It's great news for, you know, people like me where it's like, I want to spend a bunch of money on this good stuff, but I don't have it. And finally, the Torque T402.
Torque? You said twerk?
Torque.
Torque, okay.
Torque. Like,
big difference there.
Like, yeah, not twerk. You could twerk while wearing the headphones, though. That would be kind of fun. I would like to do that. The Torque T402V are headphones. And the reason that I think that they're cool is you can switch between on-ear and over-ear modes. Also, you have controls to, depending on, you know, if you're like, ooh, I like a lot of bass in my music or that sort of thing, you can go high pass, low pass, you can switch to flat sound. You have all of these controls that are in the headphones themselves, so you don't need additional software from your music source. And I love that. I like the fact that the headphones are kind of becoming self-aware.
Yeah, especially if it's coming from your phone, you can have good controls right there. Well, that's a really great article, and they really are focusing on the practical. If you're a consumer and you're looking for something to buy, here's the stuff that's real and it's really good, and for that reason, they're saying it's very interesting. I also like to look at some of the things that are not something you can buy, but point to the future as a futurist I like to look at the cultural side of technology and see where things are going. And if I were to pick one product from CES that sort of points to an amazing place where the human race is going, essentially, I would say it would have to be the Sony Core. Now, chat room, before you laugh at me, let me explain what I mean by this. The Sony Core, now if you might have seen some reports about this thing, it's essentially a little sensor that senses kind of the standard stuff you would sense in a sort of quantified self kind of thing. It senses you, whether you're sleeping, whether you're running, that sort of thing, presumably whether you're breathing, etc. And it fits into a bracelet. It could also fit into a necklace or any other number of things like that. And it works with an app, and the app essentially gathers and harvests the information from the core. The app also monitors what you're doing on the phone. Now, this is completely separate from the quantified self stuff that the actual sensor does. And so they're combining your, you know, tracking your phone calls, your music, your what you're doing, what you, when your alarm goes off, all kinds of stuff that's happening on your phone with what's happening with your physical body. Okay, so and then it puts it in a timeline. So you've heard all the buzzwords.
You're always running while you're talking to your mother.
That's exactly right. Yeah, it's a problem.
That's a pattern.
Click here to book a session with a psychiatrist. So basically, they're combining multiple buzzwords here that are actual technologies. They're combining the quantified self. They're combining wearable computing. And they're combining it with life logging and life streaming. Now, life logging and life streaming are the same thing, where you gather everything. With life logging, you keep everything. With life streaming, you share everything. And these are all combined in this one product. So I see a world in the future where almost everybody will have some kind of wearable device, whether it's glasses, a wristwatch, something that clips to your clothes. The clothes themselves will become wearable devices. The shoes will get electronics. This Internet of Things is going to be all over us. And as what's going to happen is it's going to be like the Sony Core in concept. We're going to harvest all this data from what we're doing, from how our body is doing. We're going to harvest data from our smart toaster and our smart toothbrush and all this kind of stuff that will monitor what we're doing. And we'll get this stream of information that we can do anything we want with. We can share it. We can add pictures. We can annotate it, or we can talk to it and sort of do all this kind of stuff. So the Sony Core is probably going to fail as a product. Let's face it. It's Sony, and it's kind of out there, and it's not as good as some of the other fitness things that are out there, which is how people are going to view this initially. But as a concept of combining wearable computing with quantified self, with life logging and live streaming, this is going to replace the selfie and all this other kind of social media sharing, because we're human beings. And human beings, since the beginning of time, have always wanted to capture and share things about ourselves. From cave paintings to royal portraits in the Middle Ages, to taking pictures, to nowadays social sharing, we have an instinct as human beings to do these kinds of things. And the Sony Core and the future things that are going to be like the Sony Core are going to really do that. What do you think? Am I full of it? Is that just too invasive in terms of monitoring all our data?
Well, I mean, you seem to like the technology, but you also said that the gadget itself is going to fail.
Right.
So, I don't know. I think the concept of the quantified self is really interesting to me. There's only so much data that I find is practical for me to be gathering. So, yeah, there are certain types of, again, after a period of time, you know, days or months, you start maybe seeing some trends in your behavior. But it's like, well, if I check Twitter at certain times of day religiously, does it really matter? I guess it's interesting.
Sure.
So I think we probably need this technology to mature a little bit before I can say definitively, oh, yeah, this is a good thing. We need more of this. Because right now, conceptually, it's interesting, but I just don't know how it helps me.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Dairy Geek in the chat room said that Sony is making big data out of ourselves, which is absolutely true. And we heard earlier in the week about Wolfram Alpha's big project to unify all these Internet of Things devices, including wearable devices. And presumably that data will be available to apps, which will be able to bring all this stuff together. So that's a good point, Dairy Geek. Well, in other news, today we are going to be handing out medals in the Selfie Olympics. Now, you've probably seen the Selfie Olympics pictures. They're pretty hilarious. It's basically where people take ridiculous selfies in absurd situations and postures, sometimes dangerous situations. And so we decided that today we're going to give out some medals for the Selfie Olympics, bronze, silver, and gold. So the bronze medal, I think, goes to an unknown woman who took this picture with her toe. She took a picture with her toe that was propped up on the top of a door. Her other foot is on the ground. And all the while, she's brushing her teeth. So that's just, I don't care what you say, that's just impressive. Plus, dental hygiene.
Look, we've all done this, Mike. Sure. I don't know why this is so impressive. We've all been able to pull off this feat.
I might be able to do that once. Anyway, so it's great because dental hygiene is very important. So it's
fake.
Nice to see that she's brushing her teeth. All right, so we have a 4 from the Czechoslovakian judge. The silver medal goes, and this is the one of the most fascinating things I've ever seen, goes to Ferdinand Puentes, who survived a plane crash in the ocean near the Hawaiian island of Molokai in December. After filming the crash with his GoPro camera, he continued taking pictures while clinging to a seat cushion, which was given to him by the pilot, including this epic selfie where you can actually see the sinking plane in the background. So,
you know, no big deal. I'm just out here floating. No big deal.
Folks, don't try this at home.
Yeah.
But that's great, but it's not great enough. The gold goes to Buzz Aldrin. Buzz Aldrin took the first space selfie with the planet Earth photobombing him in the background during the Gemini 12 mission in 1966, proving once again nothing beats an astronaut.
He could really use a filter there. Too many shadows.
Yeah,
come
too
on,
many shadows.
Buzz.
No kidding. And maybe like a frayed frame around the edges or something, you know? I mean, come on, Buzz.
Come on.
Instagram. Come on. Get with the current. Get with the now. Well,
so what's happening in the world of Bitcoin, Sarah?
Oh, I love the Bitcoin stories, and I've got good news. Overstock.com can claim that it's the first major retailer to officially accept payments in Bitcoin. So last Tuesday, we heard from the company that they had a deal with Coinbase to handle Bitcoin payments. And since then, apparently engineers at Overstock were working really hard through the night, overtime, to make it happen. Overstock CEO and chairman Patrick Byrne says Bitcoin can free the world from the control of big banks and big government, and believes, quote, it helps us fight the machine. I don't know what that means, but I like it.
I like it, too.
What's he talking about? He works for Overstock. Is that not a machine? I don't know.
I don't know if it's the machine.
Keep
it's
fighting the good
a
fight,
machine.
Patrick.
Well, that's our show. Don't forget to share your news tips, leaks, inside information, and feedback. Just email us at tnt@twit.tv or call 260-TNT-SHOW and leave a message. Also, upvote the stories you'd like us to see us cover on our subreddit at technewstoday.reddit.com. And definitely visit our Tech News Today Google Plus community. You'll find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. Also, check out our brand new show called Tech News Tonight, starting Monday and running every weekday at 4 p.m. Pacific. Thank you to Dan Patterson for joining us, and thank all of you for tuning in. We'll see you Monday.